The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? It's Ralph Sutton from the SDR Show. This week, really cool episode. The lead singer of Bad Wolves, super good-looking, cool dude. It is Tommy Vex, and I will tell you this. First of all, go look them up. Great band. Listen to their cover of Zombie, and then come back to the show. So push pause if you haven't heard it. But he just has a batshit crazy story. If you've never heard it before, I guarantee you, you're going to be like, holy shit. Throughout the whole episode, I just wanted him to tell the story in its entirety. That being said, we did record this one a couple of weeks ago, maybe even a month or so ago at this point, but we just wanted to get it out there now. We filmed it, I think, right at the beginning of COVID, but it is a great, great episode. Big J is back. Shannon is back. I am back, obviously. It's a really fun episode. Don't forget, we do the show live every single Wednesday night, usually 9 p.m. Eastern time. You go to the sdrshow.com/live. to watch live for free, or use the code SDR. You know this by now. You get 20% off the whole network. Brand new shows that just signed up. Are You Garbage? Without a Country? All good stuff. 22 shows. Shannon Show. The thing is, it's all there at GasDigitalNetwork.com. Use the code SDR. Get 20% off and a 2-week free trial. This episode you would have heard almost a week ago and commercial free. Here it is right now. The lead singer of Bad Wolves, Tommy Vex. Episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoe. It's weed, I beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art, it's far. You need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back once again. This at-home show with Big J Okerson, who is renting a home somewhere. I thought it was the Hamptons, but it's not. Where is it, Jay?
Catskills.
The Catskills. Very nice area. Like it. Used to go there a lot as a kid.
No, but not like Dirty Dancing's Catskills. This is like hillbilly meth head Catskills, where there's not a lot of people.
Well, I think that most of the Catskills was always hit. Since the leaving of all the big super venues that were there, the big places they used to go, they're all out of business. It's turned into a giant meth lab.
I went to the Catskills when I was a kid.
Did you? I did. Where did you go? Well, let's say we have Tommy Vex, lead singer of Bad Wolves. A lot to talk about with him. Big J Okerson. Tommy, you grew up in Brooklyn. Did you do Catskills once in a while? Like I did as a kid. That was like the cool place to go as a kid.
Yeah, there was the Catskill Game Farm, which was like a zoo. And then they had Great Escape with like the carnival rides and all that shit.
There was a place, what the fuck was it called? The Neville. That was like the big place in the Catskills because it was 11 people that owned it, and Neville was 11 backwards. How about that?
Oh,
so that makes sense. That's how they came up with the name.
I would go to, in Philly, you'd go to the Poconos.
I went to the Poconos too. I used to go to the
Poconos was too expensive.
There. You're the most Jewish. You win.
Yeah, I win. The Catskills is very Jewish. Super Jewish. Yeah.
You know who's from the Catskills?
Mike Tyson.
Lana Del Rey. I had no idea. I had dinner with her at the Hotel Mondrian with her and a few friends, some mutual friends. And she was talking about it, and I was like, oh, what do you know about the Catskill Game Farm? She's like, how do you know about that? And then we just like rattled off about the Catskills.
Yeah, I went. So when I was a kid, this is how Jewy I am. We're going to talk about super Jewy. My grandfather was part of some sort of Jewish foundation with the family, and they would take over a different hotel in the Catskills every year for Memorial Day, and we'd all go out there as a family. There'd be sometimes enough family members where they took over the whole hotel. Crazy. I'm from a very nice family, kids.
You know, I thought you were going to ask the question when he said he had dinner with Lana Del Rey. Did you fucks, dude?
Oh, that's a good question. I thought she was English.
English? Oh, wow. No, she's not English.
What does that mean? You wouldn't fuck?
I don't fuck English girls. You know that, Jay. Well,
you proper to fuck?
They gotta stick the pinky out while I'm drinking tea and fucking? I don't want to do that.
It's called a proper rogering.
That's true. Tommy, there's a lot to talk to you about. First of all, what's funny is you and I only met once when you were at Gas Digital doing the Josta show. Mm-hmm. And the moment you walked in, I'm like, God damn it, this guy's fucking good looking. It bothered me because you're better looking in person. Just want to get that out of the way. And I was like, I hope Shannon meets him. And Shannon was very happy to meet you as well. Just want to get that off the top. Get it out. We're done.
I appreciate it. Thank you for helping me with my self-esteem today. I'm going to write this in my diary tonight.
Yeah, please.
I used to be a fat kid, so I lost over 120 pounds, so I appreciate that.
But it's got to be a long time ago, because I was watching videos of you today from 10, 12 years ago, and you were still in good shape. So you're talking about when you were kid?
Yeah, I was like a teenager.
Okay.
So I was about 17, 18, and then I lost a bunch of weight, and then I gained it back in early 20s, and then I was like, fuck this.
Oh, you got fat again in your early 20s.
I went through a breakup and I got real fat.
No,
I must have gone through
a breakup because I've been getting really fat. I think I gained 8 pounds already on this fucking quarantine.
That's from quarantine. That's not that.
If I told you guys what I ate today alone, you would get sick.
You can show me a picture. It's a Middle Eastern eggs benedict.
Yeah. That's one of the things. I cook a lot. That's what I'm doing out of boredom. Tommy, now, the first thing off the bat is that you've been in music for fucking basically your whole life since you're a teenager. I read all the different bands you were in, including like Divine Heresy and Snot, and then your own solo Vex. And
Ralph, just for the record, by the way, you never introduced him as a guest. We just started talking.
I did too. I said Tommy Vex from Bad Wolves. I did too. I'll bet you $1,000.
Okay. Well, then no.
I heard it. I did hear it.
I'm telling you, I did. First of all, so I want to ask you, you grew up in Brooklyn. What part of Brooklyn did you grow up in?
I grew up in like Sheepshead Bay, Coney Island, Garrison Beach. You know that area?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up Gravesend, so that's right over there.
Gravesend, Neck Road. That was the train station. There was a band, a hardcore band called Gravesend that my old band saw. What you might not know is the band Vexed, where I got my last name. That was my band since I was 15 years old.
You ready for this? You got the name from a Wu-Tang lyric. Boom.
I did. See, you know, you did your homework.
I fucking don't fuck around. You were a rapper, aren't you?
The mystery of chess boxing. Yeah, I'm Mad Vex. What the projects made me. Rebel to the grain. Ain't no way to barricade me. That's how it goes.
Steam rolling. Do the next line. I don't want to say the word. Steam rolling. Go ahead. Steam.
No.
Team rolling.
You know,
keep going.
Okay, throw down some lines, man.
Steam rolling. Ralph, take it.
I don't know the next line.
Yeah.
It's an N-word.
So you grew up in Brooklyn. We used to, I think, also since you were over there. Yeah, I'm imagining you went to L'Amour a lot too back then, right?
Yeah, we played there. We used to party there. We used to go to shows there. I did my first bump of cocaine with Peter Steele there.
Oh, wow.
One time I took a frozen dead lizard. I used to work at a pet store, and somebody brought in this, like, 60-pound lizard, and it died in the store. And my boss put it in a freezer in the back so the animals, if they died, it wouldn't stink. So I stole this dead lizard, and I brought it to L'Amour's in my backpack, and we were playing a show there. I think we E-Town Concrete. And I when we were loading in, I put it in the ladies' room and wrapped it around the toilet, and we just hung out. And then about 10 minutes after doors opened, all you just heard were, like, blood-curdling screams, like, running out. And then the security ran in. They ran out screaming. They're like, there's an alligator in the bathroom.
How big did you say it was?
60 pounds, probably.
Christ, but it was
like a dog. Yeah, it was huge. And it was frozen stiff because the cryo freezer was like below. It was like below zero.
That's really funny.
It was pretty funny.
Now, when you went to L'Amour, was it back when they were the original L'Amour or when they switched and they opened up from the other side?
Both sides were open, actually. Okay, so both sides were open. It was when they reopened after the Life of Agony incident where the bouncers had accidentally killed a guy. So it was closed for a while, then it reopened. And then we played there with bands like Hatebreed. Like, that's where I first played a show with Jamie, Josta, Shadows Fall, who else? E-Town Concrete, 25 to Life, Candiria, Biohazard.
You were doing Vexed. This is during the original Vexed.
Yeah, yeah. And I was still in high school. I was like a senior in high school. I dropped out, but I was around 18, 19 years old. We were doing these shows and stuff, and that's where I cut my teeth. You know, there at CBGB's, the Continental, Lion's Den, on Sullivan Street.
That whole Bleecker Street strip was always like club after club that doesn't exist anymore. It was only still there, Jay, where you had your event. I can't think of the name right now.
Bitter End.
Say again? Bitter End. Yeah, it's the only one that's still left. But all clubs there, then you made a left. You went up Bleecker, and that's where Scrap Bar was back in the day, which was like the legendary rock club. They're all gone now. It's sad. Mm-hmm. So now, I know this story. I know you've said this story a million times, but I don't know if Jay is aware, and I don't know all of our fans are aware. You, first of all, the crazy story with your brother, I just want to kind of get into it a little bit. I'm a twin. Are you?
Oh, no shit.
Is he fraternal or identical?
We're fraternal.
Man, same here. So my story is not nowhere near as crazy as your story. The thing that's just weird about me and my brother is we were born in different years, because I was born on New Year's Eve and he was born January 1st, 4 minutes apart, but born in different years, which is kind of weird. But so just for fans that may
years.
Say again, it's different decades also. Sorry, I was born in the 60s. He was born in the 70s, 69 and 70.
Pretty nutty.
That's weird.
Again, Jay?
It's pretty nutty. I feel like I'm not coming through at all.
Yeah, it's clipping out a little bit, but maybe, I don't know. And Shannon, I'm not hearing you at all.
I turn my mic off for a second. I think it's Jay's Wi-Fi, maybe. So, like, his isn't coming through as strong when other people are talking.
Oh, I got you. Okay, well, look, this is what happens in the modern world of stay-home shows. We do what we can. So now, I know little bits and pieces of everything that happened with your brother, but if you could just kind of do a cliff-noted version, if you're okay with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, So just to get context, like, me, you know, when me and my brother were kids, we were like thick as thieves when we were little, and we're both adopted. Our mother was a crackhead, and we were adopted by we're mixed race. We were adopted by an Irish family, and my brother, you know, my brother struggled with mental health most of his life. By the time he'd been mentally institutionalized, but the first time I think he was 9 or 10, and then his mental illness progressed rapidly through puberty and stuff, where he was like, you know, doing really weird shit, like killing animals and setting fires and beating up me and my mother and my sister, and then manipulating my dad to believe that we were lying to my dad about what was going on. It was real. You know, he grew up to become a psychopath. Mm-hmm. And when he was in, I didn't know this until I was older. So my mother told me this in my 30s, that my brother was actually they diagnosed him at an adolescent mental health facility, that he would become a serial killer, that he had all the behavioral patterns. And so they thought that the hospital was crazy and they needed to take their son out right away, because obviously they don't know what they're talking about. And, you know, he grew up and, you know, our relationship kind of faded. In my 20s, you know, I wound up, we both sold drugs. Like, we didn't have, you know, like a lot of people, it wasn't like gangs. Like, you weren't in a gang. You know
not
what I mean?
Brooklyn,
just,
yeah, there wasn't. There
was, no, you just like people sold drugs and guns and fucking did robberies, and there was bullshit going on and stabbings and all. It was just, that was New York.
There was a couple of weird little in Brooklyn groups. There was like the Avenue U boys and the Sheepshead Bay guys.
Yeah, there was 52 Park.
That's Ralph.
But then,
Ralph's dance crew.
Yeah, and then there was like BTS, where like the rave, the people who would rob the raves, they would go in and they would fucking stab people at the raves and steal the drug dealers. You know, there was just like all these little, you know, factions. And, you know, I got hemmed up with a lot of that shit when I was a kid. You know, I saw some bad stuff, and it wasn't really a big deal. I wouldn't find out till I was in my 30s and in therapy that, like, I had post-traumatic stress disorder from seeing people get stabbed to death and being stabbed, beaten up with baseball bats, run over with cars, guns pointed to our heads, just crazy shit. And I got pretty scared. I got jumped. I got hit by a car and jumped and beat with baseball bats pretty bad. And I, like, when I was 21, I was like, I'm done. And I got a regular, I like had to go to the hospital, and then I had to physically rehabilitate myself by myself in my dad's basement. And at this time, my dad had relapsed and he became a full-blown alcoholic, and my mother and my sister like ran away, and my brother and me kind of had the run of the house. And I was like, I'm out. And I was like, I'm going to do music. And I did this band thing, and I wound up getting a record deal. And my brother stayed in that world. And then the band that I was in broke up a couple years later. I auditioned for another band. I moved to California. And then I really, me and my brother didn't really have a relationship anymore. You know, we had gotten
into a talking of any kind, not.
No, we got into an argument, and he kicked my face in while I was asleep on my mother's couch when I was home visiting for the holidays. And then I just didn't talk to him ever again. Mm-hmm. I didn't press charges or anything. I went to the hospital. I still haven't fixed my nose. But yeah, so that was just like, I was like, you know what? Like, I'm not talking with this guy anymore. And then, you know, I lived in LA. I moved to San Francisco. I was in a band. I toured all over the place. Divine Heresy had a little bit of a run. We toured all over the world. Me and the guitar player didn't get along. We wound up getting to a fist fight. I got kicked out of the band or quit, depending on who you ask. Then I joined Snot, continued touring all over. You know, and amidst all that, I had gotten in a relationship with a woman who was actually, interestingly enough, is a survivor of Hollywood child pedophilia. She was, her mother sold her Jesus. To the head of a movie production company when she was 15 or 16 years old, and then she was pretty much like a child sex traffic victim for the next 2-3 years. Jesus. And then when she got out of that situation, she went up and ended up in a mental institution because she had this relationship as a teenager with a 6-year-old man who was sexually abusing her and believed that was her boyfriend. So I know all that. So like all that, we'll get back into all that. That shit was very real, but she had gotten pregnant. And while I was on tour.
From the 6-year-old?
No. This is, that was when she was, so we met when we were both 24. So when we're 24, I'm like still doing drugs and drinking, and she does drugs and she drinks. And then she got pregnant and I stopped drinking. And then I don't know when it started, but there was a heroin relapse that caused her to lose the pregnancy. And it was very traumatic. And I was present for it. It happened in my hotel bathtub. And, you know, after that, I like couldn't handle it. And I like, this is how I came to get sober. Like I had about, the relationship ended. It was, you know, we hung in there for a little bit. It became violent. We were both addicts and alcoholics. One day I just bounced, shit got real bad, and we split up, and I never saw her again. And, I ended up drinking and drugging like every single second of every single day for almost a year till I had like 2 ODs, and I ended up homeless, and I had to move in on my guitar player from Snot, Sonny, his couch, and that's when I got sober. So all these years go by, and now I'm 27 or 28, and I don't have a relationship with my brother. So I get sober, you know, I do the whole recovery thing. I did this. I got into a 12-step program, and then I got funding to go to a sober living because I had been sleeping on a couch for four months. And I just got a. I left the music industry. I got a job at a dog kennel and another job as a bouncer, and I put my life back together. And then I moved.
Are you back in California, or you're back in New York when you're doing this?
No, this is in California. So I was living on the West Side, and. Mm-hmm. Doc from Bad Wolves, who we've been friends since we were, you know, 22 years old, 21 years old. He was looking to start a new project. So I moved back to New York. Mm-hmm. And we had been trying, this is in 2010.
All right, before we go any further, one of our longtime sponsors of the show. And what does the sponsor and Shannon have in common? Love them dicks. That's right. It is dickatyourdoor.com. They've been a sponsor for a while now, and now, during this chaos, Let's put it this way. Maybe it's even hard to get food these days. So order a bag of dicks. Come on, chomp down on some chocolate cock. For God's sakes, it's a fun gift. You send it to someone. The way I suggest this, and Shannon, you can chime in if you don't mind. I want to hear your opinion on this. Imagine you just open your mail today, and there's just a varied sources of big, beautiful black cocks in your mailbox. Would that not make you happy?
Well, I have a question. Would they happen to be vegan?
They are vegan. They are vegan chocolates. It's good that you'd ask.
Then I'd be thrilled.
Yeah, so that's a good thing to do. I'll give you Shannon's address. Just email me. I'll tell you where she lives. Go to dickatyourdoor.com. Use the code SDR. Get 20% off. Not just chocolate wieners. They also have these cool cards that make a lot of noise. I actually was testing one out today because I might do something with it later with a lady. But if you just do it right now, dickatyourdoor.com, I promise you this. If there's a girl you like or a boy you like, it is 100% a conversation starter. Vegan chocolate penises. What more do you need? Go to dickatyourdoor.com, use the code SDR, and just hit me up. I'll send you Shannon's address. Okay, let's get back into it. Yeah, it's funny, by the way, just to stop for a second. I watched some old videos of you, and I saw a video of you being interviewed right after the incident happened with the guitar player from Divine Heresy. And you were talking about how you were going to do a band with Doc that you've been friends with. I've been talking about it for a while, but he had to go finish the tour with... what band was it? God Forbid. Where was he in before? God Forbid. And then, so that was like, wow, I didn't realize you guys knew each other that long. So that was from, so this time. So go back, you're saying, so you moved back to New York to start working with Doc.
Yeah, so I moved back to New York. I got, I started working at a club. Me and Doc went out one night to this club, and it happened to be owned by our buddy Dave Delzio and Chris Santos, who owns Beauty in Essex. And we got jobs as bouncers. We were working on records. Like, we were writing music and just, like, getting in the cut. And on September 20th of 2010, my brother, I was on a date, and he had broken into the apartment. And I came in and confronted him, and he had been stabbed in the face. He had stitches. And I could tell he'd been smoking angel dust. And then basically, I told him he had to leave. And, you know, I knew if we got into a fight in the house, the whole house would get destroyed. Like, you know, I'm 6'1" and I'm about 250 pounds now. My brother is 6'2" and he's pushing 330. Mm-hmm. This is a big boy. Yeah, and so we grew up fighting, and, like, you know, we're at this point 27, 28 years old. Like, if we get into a fight, everything's going to get trashed. So I got him outside, and I was like, listen, man, like, I'm like, you need to get the fuck out of here. And I was like, stay away from mom, stay away from my sister. I'm like, you need to go somewhere and sleep it off. And basically, if, you know, call me tomorrow or the next day, and I'll help you go to rehab. And I'll call my people in recovery, and I'll help you get sober. He was like not having it. He wanted me to help him murder somebody.
Jesus.
So basically, I was like, no thanks. And I just wound up, I went back in the house, and my sister lived about 5 blocks away. And I like kind of collected myself and realized that he was going to go there next. And so I like changed because I was like wearing like nice clothes to go to from dinner. And I put on my running shoes, and I was like, I'll just go around the block and I'll outrun him. By the time I got to the end, I literally came down the stairs and got to the end of the driveway. And he hit me in the back of the skull with a crowbar. He was waiting in the bushes. And he fractured the back of my skull and then beat me. He just beat me. You know, I tried to fight him back. He broke my left arm. I had open compound fractures. The bottom bone in my forearm pushed through the top bone and protruded through the top part of the skin. The long story short is he beat me until my spleen ruptured. I managed to get away from him, and I ran down the street to the neighbor's house, and he fled. And, I went to the hospital. I went to Brookdale Hospital.
Your neighbors brought you to the hospital, I imagine.
No, the ambulance came.
Okay.
And then I went to the hospital, and it was like crazy. And my mom, my sister were there, and the girl that I had was seeing showed up, and then I got discharged, I think, the next day. They didn't know that I had a perforated spleen or was internally bleeding, and I didn't have insurance, so they just kicked me out of the hospital. And I went to go stay with a friend in Manhattan, a girlfriend of mine named Brooke McLean, who her, it's actually her dad is a music industry legendary guy. He used to manage the Beatles, and he found Madonna, and and she used to work for Slipknot. She was a TM for Slipknot, so she was like, "Just come stay with me, until you can heal up." So I had a broken arm, this or the other. A couple days into staying with Brooke, I went across the street to get something to eat, and I felt weird, dizzy. I thought I was hungry, and I went to the Shake Shack on 86 in Lexington, and I was standing in line, and I ordered my food, and then I heard a pop, and I thought somebody hit me with a water balloon, but my spleen had swolled up and exploded.
Oh.
And I dropped out.
Right.
Yeah, and I passed out, and I kept coming to and passing out, and I woke up in the ER, and my mom was there. I must have somehow called my family. I don't know. I called a couple people, and then they showed up, and I began bleeding to death. I began dying. Yeah, and my mom had held my hand and watched me die.
Jesus Christ.
And I flatlined, and I remember the nurses running in, and it was just like a shit show, man. And I had a near-death experience, and I woke up in the ICU, and I had an out-of-body experience. I had the full, white light, the whole nine. I don't really talk about it much. But I died and went somewhere, and I saw people that I knew, but they didn't have faces or anything. It was just like beings. And, it's like, I knew these people for thousands of years.
Wow.
And then I was like, I had forgotten I used to be alive, and they were like, "Oh, you don't have to stay if you don't want to." And I was like, "Oh shit, I'm not done. I forgot. I'm like, I can't leave now." And I fell. I fell back into my body. And it felt like I fell from from another solar system. It was the weirdest feeling. And I was above my body in the ICU. And then I just remember getting sucked back in, and I sat up and I took the deepest breath. Like, as if someone had been holding me underwater. And my nurse came in, and she was like, "Oh, welcome back." And my nurse was this girl, Jessie, who was my high school girlfriend's best friend, who I hadn't seen in 15 years. It'd been something like 10 years. And it's fucking crazy.
But then also, didn't your brother, or is this one of those internet rumors, put a hit out on you also, or is that not true?
No, it's true. I pressed charges. To be honest, I had considered taking him out. And the reality is that I got sober and I found God, and I don't live by that bullshit anymore. And I found myself cooperating with the police for the first time in my life. And it was very strange, because it was against everything that I had grown up in the neighborhood knowing, you never snitch.
Wait, but before you get too far away from it, fuck the nurse.
What's up?
Fuck the nurse, the girl that was the friend of the girlfriend from high school.
No.
Too bad. That would have been a good story.
No, but my ex actually wound up showing up and coming to the hospital, and then
you had a threesome with her and the nurse.
No, but we're gonna talk about all that stuff later. We'll get into this. I mean, I'll push your wig back, bro. Listen, if you think this is crazy, this is not the craziest things I've been through. Okay.
All right. So then, you started cooperating with the police, and then you testified. I know that, but when did he actually put a hit out on you?
Well, so when you testify on the grand jury, you testify so that the grand jury can deliberate on if a crime has occurred. And because it's an attempted murder trial, you have to go to the grand jury. So I went in, and once that happened, my brother went into hiding. He got locked up, he posted bail, then he disappeared. But what he didn't realize was that his phone conversations were being recorded while he was in Rikers Island. They record your phone conversations. And he had admitted to my mother that he had paid somebody to murder me, and he had borrowed money from my mother, who my mother had borrowed money from me, from my benefit concert. So this is how fucked up my family is. So, you know, I'm fucking, so what happens is that this is takes months to transpire because they're building a case. He's on the lam. They couldn't find him. They finally caught him. During this time, you know, I get out of the hospital and I'm at Cornell University in Manhattan, and I'm getting discharged the same day that Charlie Sheen is being fucking brought in handcuffs. So I get out of the hospital and there's paparazzi and flashbulbs and all this shit. And me and Tyler.
Was there a brief moment where you thought, wow, I didn't realize my coming out of the hospital was going to be this well covered?
No, well, I was like, so me and Tyler, whose father is Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, came to pick me up from the hospital and take me to stay at their family's house in Massachusetts. God. So I was kind of confused, and I was undilaudid, and I hadn't had any drugs in my system in over a year and a half. And I was like, what the fuck's going on? And then her and her family took me in, and I recovered from my injuries at Steven Tyler's house in Massachusetts. They took care of me. And then when I was able to travel, I went back to New York and I stayed with Brooke. And, you know, my brother had subsequently gone to Florida and disappeared. So mm-hmm. I wound up finding out that way later on. So everything's quiet. I'm laying low, you know, I'm just recovering. And then, you know, Doc, the guys in God Forbid and Mutiny Within throw me a benefit concert, and Brooke manages the whole thing, and we had it at Santos Party House where I used to work, and everybody showed up and worked for free, and it was like super dope. And then 2 months later, I went to go see Disturbed because David had donated to my benefit, and my mom wrote him a thank you card, and I went to bring it to him, and it was Disturbed and Korn and Seven Dust, and In This Moment was opening. And I've known all these guys forever. And so I got there, and then I ran into Mary, who's Maria Brink.
What venue did you go to? I think I went to that concert.
Hammerstein. It was Hammerstein Ballroom. Yeah. Music as a Weapon tour.
Yeah.
I go backstage, and I see In This Moment, and they're like, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, nothing. I just came to see David, and I'm sorry I missed your guys' show. And they're like, we had a backup singer who's doing this duet with us on this tour, and like we had to fire him because of drinking or something. I don't know what he got fired for. And they're like, would you come and sing? Because this song's at radio right now, and it was called The Promise, and it was featuring the guy from Otherwise, Adrian Patrick. So I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. But like, when do you need me to do it? They're like, tonight. And I'm like, all right. So I had like just gone back to, and this is funny, like I just got a job bouncing again, and I was like skinny as fuck. Like I hadn't worked out. Like I just started working out again. And I got this job from a guy that I worked with at Santos Party House named Sam. And the bar was a gay bar owned by Anderson Cooper's boyfriend, Paulo. And so I got this job bouncing at this gay bar. And then I only had worked there for like 2 weeks, and I was just trying to get my back on my feet. And I had to call him and say, hey man, like I can't come into work. I got to go on tour with Korn. And they were like, oh no, Tommy, please go. Like they were like, congratulations. Like I was like, thanks. Sick. Thanks guys. So I went on the tour that day. Like I went home, packed up a bag, came back, and then I got a ride with Disturbed to the next show. And I got on that tour. So that I went on that tour for 4 or 5 months. It's a huge US tour. Mm-hmm. And then when I came home, it was April, like mid-April. I had my birthday, but I had my friends and my mom come. We went to Beauty in Essex, and then I got a call. A detective car came and picked me up from my apartment. They took me downtown, And I met with the district attorney's office, the ADA at the time, Kevin Allback, and he played me the sequence of tapes from my brother's recorded phone conversations in Rikers Island. And he was like, is this real? And I was like, I remember like hearing, and I like started crying, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to die. He's like, I'm going to die.
Jesus.
Because I know. Yeah, well, my brother's murdered a lot of people. He used to murder hookers at the Windjammer and get smoke dust and tell my mom all these stories. And then it would like, the murders would pop, check out, but my mom was too afraid of my brother to like call the police. Well, she just, you know, she's like one of those mothers. She's like, not my son. I'm like, Mom. Anyway, so this is my wonderful family. And yeah, I went into witness protection for the next 10 months. And yeah, and I went back to California for a little bit. They gave me $300 a month to live off of. And
Shannon gets paid here, by the way.
Yeah, which is like, it's not much, but it's honest work.
Then you testified at his trial, or because you know he's coming out this year or next year, right?
No, he got 17 years.
Oh, I thought it was 10.
No, he got 17 or not 19 years, 17 years in 2012. So okay, it took 2 years for everything to go down. So let's see. I stayed in Sanford, Florida. And I hid out there at a studio, and Doc and me and AJ from Mutiny Within and A.L. Levy from the metal band Dot that was on Roadrunner, we tried to start a band with Jeff Fab, who Jeff quit in this moment. So we wound up going to Boca Raton to like jam at Jeff's rehearsal place. He had this girlfriend and she let us stay. She was rich and she had this big house, like this big condo. And she let us stay with her. And we were writing this record. And then we went to Sanford to record. And then A.L. and Doc did not get along, so they and everyone voted Doc out of the band, and it was like the worst thing that ever happened to me and him as our friendship. And I had to be the one to tell him, and then he left, and he was super pissed. And then we didn't talk for a couple months, and then A.L. was going through like a weird—I don't know if he was going through a drug issue or a depression issue, but he was getting weird. And then we decided we were just like gonna dip, so we wound up going to Jersey, and I wound up like finding a place and staying at this recording studio, Treehouse Sound, and we were recording there, and then that didn't work out. So then we wound up, like, it was this whole fucking thing. And then the guy who he hired to kill me was murdered. And I got the call.
Did you get your money back in that situation?
No. I don't know. Okay. Listen, I don't know about that stuff. I don't know shit.
Didn't you use part of that police recording in a song?
Yeah. So on the tape, well, this is where that comes from. So Remember When is the on the Disobey record is about us growing up and then what happened. But on the new album, on Nation, Foe or Friend is the continuation. Foe or Friend is the process of being in the witness protection program. My brother, when he was first apprehended, he tried to hang himself in prison to get moved to a psych ward where he could escape, but they didn't buy it. And there was all this drama. And after the guy who was hired to kill me got killed, my brother lost his shit. And then he started calling me. So he was calling me. He was smoking dust and calling me. And I was hiding out in Jersey. He was in Brooklyn. The DA was calling me. The district attorney called me the morning my brother bench warranted to tell me he didn't show up to court. And I was like, I know. He's been calling me for 24 hours straight every fucking 2 minutes. He's out of his mind telling me he's going to kill me. And I'm like, and then he started calling right then. And I was like, he's literally calling me now. He's like, merge the call. So my brother gets on the phone and he's been trying to talk to me for fucking hours and I won't answer. And I'm like, what do you want? And he's like, I'm going to fucking kill you. He just starts going ballistic, crazy, saying like the most insane shit. And the DA recorded it, put it on speakerphone at his office with all the other attorneys. They took it to a judge. The judge gave an affidavit. They subpoenaed AT&T. AT&T had to give up the GPS of the phone to the FBI.
Jesus Christ.
Because when you intend, well, it becomes a federal investigation if it's an attempted murder trial or a murder trial and you intimidate a witness.
Right.
Now you're in a whole nother ballgame of your phone. So it took 48 hours. They found him in 48 hours.
It's amazing to me, Jay and Tommy, listening to your life with your brother, how much it mirrors my life with my twin brother.
Very similar, except Ralph's brother is murdering pussy. Yeah. While Ralph's jacking off in his apartment by himself.
Yeah, yeah, it's the same thing. Well, any woman that's been with me wants to get into witness protection. That's the only thing. I mean, that is so. Is the birthing of bad wolves sort of happened while in witness protection? Is that right to say?
Not really, because what happened after that was bad wolves didn't happen till like almost. I mean, that's 2020. That assault was 10 years ago. The case ended 8 years ago. And we basically, I did two other bands. I did Vexed after that. Right. And I was really struggling with survivor's guilt and suicidal depression. I almost killed myself. My suicide attempt was interrupted by a kid who needed to get sober. I was going to jump in front of the J train at the Brooklyn Junction. And I was just real low. I had like, my girlfriend kicked me out. I lost my job as a bar manager because the owner of the bar was cheating on his wife with one of the fucking bartenders. I found out. I got fired. I fucking cursed everybody out. And I was like going to jump in front of the train and on an above ground platform, because if the train didn't kill me, then I would fall and I would definitely be dead. And my phone started ringing when I saw the train, and I was like, I don't even know why I answered it. And I picked up the phone, and some kid was crying, and he was like, "Is this Tommy Vex?" And I'm like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Yeah." I'm like, "I'm really in the middle of something. Who is this?" And he said, "I need help." And I was like, "Fuck, all right." And I was like, "Where are you?" And then I got on the train, and I took the train to Union Station, and I met up with the kid, and I started taking him to recovery meetings, and he was a heroin addict. He had OD'd, and his friends left him to die and robbed him in Chinatown. And his parents had kicked him out, and he was in a punk band, like a punk hardcore band. And I had met him way like 2 years before when I was working as a bouncer. You know, because his band.
Your number?
Yeah, his band played the club, and I think he got my phone number from Melissa Cross, who's my singing teacher, who's also been sober for almost 30 years. So, kid saved my life, and now he's like my brother now. He's like one of my closest.
How far after that phone call with him did you let him know that that was the day you were going to kill yourself? Like, when did he find that out?
3 years later, I moved back to California, and I took him through the steps. He got sober. His life got better. He's fucking balling now. He made a shit ton of money on the stock market. And, you know, he got his life together, got a girlfriend and a dog, and he's got a sick penthouse apartment. And there's a place where I got sober in Santa Monica that I always talked about. And for his third year sober, he flew there and he came to visit. And so he came to where the group where I got sober. And everybody had heard this story, but he never knew.
Oh, wow.
And so they called on him, and he shared, and he was saying how he met me, and he called me one day. And, like, people who knew, and it was just, like, super intense. And then they called on me, and I was like, and I told the story. And everybody cried, and I hugged them. And that's one of the most powerful messages of my life is that don't be too proud to ask for help, because when we allow ourselves to receive help from others, we don't know if we're helping save that person too. It's like a lot of people who rescue dogs, they say that their dogs rescued them, you know, and it's the same thing with people.
I think the real miracle there is that that your phone got signal on that platform. Mm-hmm.
it was above ground.
Oh.
Well, if I was underground,
right, the pocket for 15 minutes.
He's saying that the reason why he did it above ground was so that if the train didn't kill you, the fall would have killed you. That's true. It made sense. If he didn't think it through, he might have been down. We may not have been talking to him right now. That's where we're at right now.
I'm a man of plans. I like planning things.
Now, a couple of quick questions. I know, Jay, he might sing a little a cappella, he told us, which is kind of cool. You also now, I mean, Javis, I can see by listening to you, you do motivational speaking. You help a lot of other entertainers get sober and into 12-step programs as well, correct?
Yeah, I did that. So before Bad Wolves, I was working primarily, I had a metal band called Westville Massacre that I did my funded myself, and I made the records with studio musicians, and then I went on tour with like a backup band. And I was mostly working as a sober companion. I started out running a men's sober living facility in Santa Monica, and I worked for Earl Hightower. And he heard my story and then got to know me and started training me to be a sober coach. Mm. And so I trained under him. I became a counselor. And then I started working with, like, I mean, massive celebrity clients. Like, I obviously I've signed NDAs, but you can't possibly imagine or fathom the lives these people lead. Like, it's fucking so insane.
Michelle Obama.
No, it was a, no. I was going to say, no, it was, I don't work with women, but then I was like, oh, yeah.
Well, I was going to say it rhymes with Schmathew McConaughey because you kind of got inspired from the name Bad Wolves from Matthew McConaughey. Is that not true?
Well, not from Matthew McConaughey.
From the scene in the movie that he spoke.
Yeah, from Interstellar. He tells a story that I had recalled. I actually heard that story in a meeting about the two wolves. And then I went to see Interstellar, and it reminded me. And I was like, oh, every man inside has two wolves, a good wolf and a bad wolf. And the tribesman is telling this to the elder tribesman is telling this to the, you know, Native American kid. And he's like, well, which one wins? And he's like, the one that you feed. And that's how Bad Wolves came to be.
And then at somewhere along the way, you became friendly with Zoltan from Five Finger because they were the original Bad Wolves manager. He was the original Bad Wolves manager. Is he still your manager now?
Yeah, he's still our manager. So I love Zoe. I've known Five Finger since they were like a baby band. So when Divine Heresy came out.
Sorry, when their first album came out, I got to sit in whatever label that was and just did an interview when Zoltan was first there. And I got to sit and talk with him before the album was officially released. And that was, I listened to that first record, was so great. But he was always a super cool dude. I only met him a couple times, Zoltan.
Yeah, he's rad, man. He's got a crazy life story too, dude. He escaped communist Hungary and came to America and didn't even speak English. And he wound up getting a job over here. And he's like, he's worked for NASA. And, he's worked for, I can't remember what record label. He worked for a reggae label, an R&B label when he first came to the States. And he lived out by Far Rockaway in like those mental illness buildings where those crazy people live. And then in the hood, and like nobody used to fuck with him because he used to have a trench coat and they thought he was carrying a shotgun under it. Like,
hilarious.
He's got crazy stories. He lived in fucking East New York too. Like, his buddy had a dog named Nigger, and he was the only white guy in the projects. And one day his buddy left him to watch Nigger, and Nigger ran out in the street, and he had to go outside and call the dog, but he couldn't, he wouldn't say the name because he was like out of respect. And so he was like, come on, Nookie, like, come, Nugget. And the dog won't listen. It's running up and down the street. And the lady next door is like, honey, everyone's laughing, and I'm watching this whole fucking thing go down because he won't call the dog by its name. And she's like, she like blows the whistle. She's like, come here, nigger. And the dog's like, okay. And the dog goes back in the house. But he's got crazy, Zoe's got crazy, like, New York stories. And I just fuck with him. He's like, man, he's like one of the most real motherfuckers. And he's humble as fuck, and he's on paper. Like, he literally is a genius on paper. He's like psychologically and spiritually, he's like a person of excellence.
All right, before we go any further, this is a really cool sponsor. This is how I describe this. Because look, you're a fan of the show. You know I'm not a smoker. I don't smoke a lot of weed. I know that there are people that are trying to say maybe they smoke too much weed. Or sometimes they don't just want the full-fledged feeling of weed and just the positive attributes of the CBD, but you like that feeling of smoking. Boy, do we have a sponsor for you. It's Cushy Dreams. They look and feel and the concept, it's just all like weed. High quality, but it is THC free. It is grown in California. I tell you, when it came to my house, it said something like, you know, dear mailman, this is not actually weed, although it may look like weed. There is no THC in this. It is 100% legal in all the states. So what you do is you get all the great quality of CBD. Shannon and I both agree, Jay as well, that CBD has a lot of powerful benefits. Like I use the creams and sometimes it helps you sleep and all that stuff. This is all that plus the feeling of smoking. If you really feel that need to smoke, which a lot of you do, this is your answer. They even sell pre-rolled CBD joints, varieties of strains. So you're really good for the person that's a real cannabis expert, someone who really wants to still feel the art of the weed smoke. Go to Cushy Dreams. That's Cushy with a K, CushyDreams.com. If you use the code SDR, you get 20% off your entire first order, 20% off. Smoke your CBD. Why? Because you can. All right, let's get back into it. Again, by the way, another man who I feel really mirrors my life. A genius.
Sure. Yeah.
The other thing I want to say is that in the one of the last videos you guys did for Killing Me Slowly, whose idea was it to put in my man crush, Kevin Creekman? Because, boy, is that guy good looking.
Oh, Kevin is my homeboy. So this is funny. Like,
you know what he looks like, Jay, by the way? You have any idea who Kevin Creekman is, Jay?
No.
Shannon, can you pull him up? He's so ridiculously good looking.
Kevin Creekman?
Yeah, you know.
Kevin Creekman. Yeah, he's an Instagram model. But so Kevin, how do I know Kevin? So I used to, I dated this Australian girl, not my girlfriend. I dated I had an ex-girlfriend from Brisbane, but I dated a girl from the Gold Coast who were still very close. And she is in love with Kevin Creekman. Mm-hmm. And there he is.
There you go. Look at the boy.
And so Kevin is German and moved to America, to California. I don't know this guy, whatever. And then she would post in her story this dude. And one day I was at Gold's Gym and I'm like, I see this dude. I'm like, yo, are you the Creek guy? Because I wanted to take a selfie with him and be like, yo, he's right here. Because I'm like, you know, I respect the hustle. And he was like, are you the singer of Bad Wolves? And I was like, yeah. He's like, yo, you guys are awesome. And I was like, you like metal? He's like, yeah, I'm from Germany. I'm friends with In Flames. And then we just started talking about metal. And I just became friends with him from there. And then
it's funny to watch his
work out together. And
I looked at his Instagram once, not that long ago, before he started getting all big. He was like a skinny guy with no tattoos.
Well, so this is what people don't know. He was obese. So he had to have surgery to remove the excess skin because he lost almost 200 pounds or something.
Wow.
And so he got tattooed all over to cover up the scars from his surgery and just because it looked sick. And then he became he doesn't have if you see his Instagram, you would be like, oh, this guy's like fucking Hollywood douchebag, but he's not. He's like a European ex-fat kid who's just a nice guy. And he's the coolest dude. And so we were shooting this music video and I was like, yo, you want to be in my music video? And he's like, yeah, fuck it. Okay, cool. And so that was it.
That's cool. I like it. Jay, it seemed like you were shitting on me for knowing him.
No, yeah, I mean, why? You're he's my man crush. He's an Instagram model. What's the thing?
I saw him, but at one point, he was popping up everywhere. What did you say?
How are you coming across him? I'm not arguing. He's your man crush. Fine. You say that three times a week about three different guys, by the way.
The guys from Supernatural, Thor.
Pelfrey.
Who?
Tom Pelfrey.
Hey, that's true. Tom Pelfrey. Yeah, that's a lot of them.
Your man.
Who's Tom Pelfrey?
The guy from Ozark and Banshee.
Ozark.
Hold on, I'll find him. He's the brother. He's what's her face? Wendy? What's her name?
Yeah, he was great.
Some reason Jay keeps cutting out. I'm sorry.
You want to keep having sex with the guys, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to.
But why do you judge guys like that? Why don't you just say it's a good looking guy and the world can get past that? But you're throwing. You're throwing some things. You have to make some phone calls when we hang this up.
He's cut off.
I can't. Oh, that's
him. I see him.
Yeah, I see him. I have no idea who that is. I've never seen that guy ever.
Oh, really? No, he's great. He's such a good actor.
He's a good actor.
Well, no, you got to. Did you not see him in Banshee, all tatted up and buff? He looked great in Banshee.
Shit.
Jay, I'm not the one that fucking got giggly when a Dominican porn star pulled out his dick. You're like, oh my God, that's Mandingo.
I'd seen that dick slide into so many pussies, and I got to meet the guy attached.
You were a giggly little schoolgirl when that guy whipped out his dick.
It must work, dude. I know it's
far gayer than me thinking that guy's good looking.
Guy lays it down, dude. Mr. McConaman.
McConaman, that was his name. I called him Mandingo for some reason, but yeah, McConaman.
This is amazing.
That guy makes Latino girls fucking ooh and ah. You can't do that.
I've never done that. No, I've never done that.
You got to slang it.
I can.
I'm sure he can. I can. I just got to trick them into sleeping with me. I'm an old man.
Yeah. Promises of acting work and karate chops to the back of the neck. Ralph.
Hey, whatever you got to do. As you get older, you got to switch around. Figure out what works for you. So now, let me ask you this. I don't know if it's possible, but we talked about you potentially doing something a cappella. Is that something you would do?
I don't know. I got nothing. I got no
here. Tommy, you're off the hook already. I know as a performer, if somebody was like, tell one of your best jokes right now, I'd tell them to suck
He said at the top of the show before you joined us that he might do it.
I'm telling you as an artist.
Yeah, I'm not particularly warmed up or anything. I just went for a run on the beach with a lady friend of mine, so I'm pretty shot.
I was worth a try. CJ, I will at least ask because for the betterment of the show, one of us has to be the asshole to ask.
I'm not arguing you can ask, but the second I saw as a performer, when I saw him go, I was like, Ralph, don't even say it again. Just walk away from it totally. He doesn't want to do it.
If I didn't do that last week, you would have never gotten Babe out of Dennis DeYoung because I asked him after he did his medley of five songs, I said, can you do Babe also because it would make Jay happy.
You go back to the tape. I believe I brought it up. And then
he
brought it up. And then when he stopped in the middle of the song, I grabbed that old son of a bitch by his virtual fucking collar. And I said, you're going to jerk me off all the way to the chorus of Babe and then not sing the chorus. You're going to edge me, you piece of shit.
True.
That's a hard edge, man. That's tough.
Babe's all build up to one crescendo. Motherfucker. I straightened his ass out.
Yeah, you had to. You had to throw it down. What are you going to do? Oh, on a side note, totally unrelated to Tommy's. I'm sorry, but Jay, I forgot to tell you this last week. This happens, I'm sure, to you, Tommy, often, but it doesn't happen to me. When a really hot girl adds you on Instagram and DMs you a little bit, I immediately think this is fake because I'm not a good-looking man, and there's got to be something going on here. And I start messaging with her, and she seems real. And I'm like, I don't mean to be an asshole, but how did you find me? And she goes, oh, believe it or not, I'm a big fan of Mark Ribolette. And I saw him, then saw the interview that you guys did, and I came to find you and DM'd you. And now I'm going to take her out after the quarantine. So thank you, Mark Ribolette, if he still listens and watches.
Long-term.
Wait, why are you waiting till the end of quarantine?
No girl is going to come out right now. No girl's meeting you. They're not meeting me, Tommy. They meet you.
They fly in from Nashville, Miami.
Yeah, but I'm not you, piece of shit. All right, I'm a fat old Jew. I don't have
Don't be fucking.
Was wanted, killed my brother almost killed me. I don't have any of those cool stories.
Listen, I know you Jews got fat cocks. Don't lie to me, bro. Okay, I went to Orthodox school for a year. I got thrown out.
My cool story is when I got extra sushi by the waiter at the restaurant. That's not a cool story.
Ralph presents Magnum condoms, but he uses regulars.
Yeah, I just leave the Magnums out on the table to give them hope.
You just open them up and switch them out and then reseal them?
Reseal them.
Oh, my God. Dealer. That's fucking hilarious.
Whatever you got to do, man. All the tricks.
He takes them back to Best Buy.
All right, so now, Tommy, also the band recently released two songs on Patreon. Those like not even it was very recently, right?
We released eight songs on Patreon. Well, right now
the Nirvana cover.
Yeah, we did Heart Shaped Box. We did Video Games from Lana Del Rey on Friday. Everybody Wants to Rule the World drops, and then we also released I Swear and Blood and Bones and Shanghai, which are B-sides that are previously unreleased. They only came out on Japanese vinyl.
Mm-hmm. And so, you're doing, are they full-on songs? They're acoustic or?
No, they're full. Some of the songs are acoustic. We did Last Resort by Papa Roach acoustically. We're releasing an acoustic version of Truth or Dare, which is on Disobey, and no one's ever heard that. We had snippets up and people kind of went crazy for it. So we're going to have about 15 tracks that are exclusive to Patreon that only stream on Patreon. That's and then cool. We're also releasing a movie, and we're going to be doing that in four parts. What else are we doing? You know, we're on there. We like do Q&As and
yeah, you're doing Instagram Live with fans every week also, right?
Yeah. When the quarantine first started, I was just at night. I was bored. So I was like, and I just went through a breakup. So I had nothing to do. And I was just calling people and checking on them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really cool. Now I just do it at random. I just talk to people.
That's the quarantine has been the best for my game in meeting chicks online because they're so fucking bored. They'll even answer me. It's a great thing right now. I don't know what's going to happen once this crisis is lifted. I doubt we're actually going to make anything happen, but boy.
I want to see the curve flattened from girls telling you to go on dates now.
That's going to be a real flattening of a curve. Yeah, real flattening. Jesus Christ.
Right, so now, Ralph's had a record number of girl guest cases.
I'm like literally getting text messages from celebrity singers right now while you guys are talking all this shit. Can you answer? Are you busy? What are you doing? I'm like...
Well, and related story, my mom just texted me, are you okay? So it's kind of the same thing again.
That's good. My mom's the biggest celebrity to me. Yeah. I watched the sunset in Malibu and I FaceTime with my mom so she could watch it with me yesterday.
My mom's a celebrity, aging porn star Nina Hartley.
That's your mom. Okay. Wait, am I your stepfather?
Look, she sucks a dick, so people tells me.
Nina held up pretty well, huh?
Yeah. Also, we just had Christy Canyon on the show.
Not yet.
But she looked great. She really looks great. She ate really
good. Is.
Christy Canyon? Oh, my. She's great.
I mentioned that show to my ex-boyfriend, and he was flabbergasted. There's no other celebrity I've ever mentioned that's been on the show that he's been excited about until I mentioned Christy Canyon.
I was surprised. I mean,
now I got to Google her. I have no idea who this is.
Yeah, I'm sure you could more than Google her. You're both out in L.A.
Call him so much. Also, Shannon's great.
Let's do this, Jay. Let's do the first with him, and then we'll wrap up. So we're going to hit the first.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
All right, so you know the name of the show, Tommy. It is a sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. We ask everybody this question for the last 5.5 years. Which is your first experience with all three. And we start with rock and roll, meaning the first concert you went to, hopefully a band that people would know, not just some local band that you saw at L'Amour or something. You know?
No, I saw a couple of fucking shitty bands. Like when I was 13 or 14, I must've been 1996. I was 14 years old. My first real concert I saw was Korn, and they played on the Life is Peachy tour, and I'd already been listening to them. I just wasn't allowed to go to anything. And I remember going with my friend Rob, and we had to scalp tickets for $40, and I saved up. I was making $3.50 an hour at a deli I worked at as a stock boy, and then I only had $20, and my dad gave me another $20. So I literally went to, like, as 14 years old, to the city with $24.60, like, to go to this show, with $44.60, like, and I was, like, going to the show, and it was $40 to get in. So I had, like, no money for water, none of that.
That's crazy. You know, Jay, I don't know if you know this, but Jay opened for Korn.
Oh, really?
Toured them for 3 months.
Oh, okay, what year?
2010.
Oh, nice. Dope. Yeah.
I did that in Mayhem Fest.
Oh, sick. Yeah, I know Mayhem Fest.
So now your first drug experience, Tommy, but ideally not weed, unless weed was not your first drug or your first drug after weed.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, like, I when I was 13, 12 or 13, I forgot, one summer, you know, me and my buddies convinced this handicapped guy to buy us booze, and then we got him to, he was like, you know, he was... he was like
started.
Yeah, but I don't like using that word. That's not.
Well, I remember the day, and I prefer to call myself mentally challenged.
Yeah, so we convinced him to steal $20 from his older sister and buy us a case of beer when he turned 21. And so we got a bunch of beers and we got drunk, and then the next day I smoked pot. But that was like kid stuff. I didn't really like hit the, like, I started sniffing Special K like 15 and taking LSD and mescaline and ecstasy, like all around those times. And then, but I don't remember the first time I did, like, I tripped or I did it, went to a K-hole. I don't really remember.
Doesn't really stick out. All right, now, how about the first time you had sex? How old were you?
I was actually a late bloomer. I didn't have sex until I was 16. And I thought I was so fucking cool because my girlfriend was 22.
What?
And like, I had like, I was like, I had a growth spurt. And then all of a sudden, I was like, one summer, I went from being like stubby, fat, weird kid. And then I was like 6 foot tall, like in like 2 months. I don't know what the fuck happened. And so, and then I got this girlfriend and she was older than me. And
we had sex. Did she know you were a virgin?
Yeah, she knew.
That's kind of cool. Does she still reach out to you once in a while on DM or?
No, I saw her. Actually, she became a nurse and had a kid and got married. I saw her on a train. I was in New York City doing press and I was like going somewhere and I got on the train and I was like, Chrissy? And she was like, oh my God. And we just like chatted it up and that was it.
That's cool. Now,
random.
You know, right, it's funny, real quick, with Tommy's stories about doing all these drugs, and we all just did ecstasy for the first time 1 year ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you guys probably had nice families.
Well, my shit was pretty wacky, too, but I just was, I don't know, I was afraid of drugs always. But that Molly, boy, that sure was fun.
What I didn't really Molly care.
Was Molly was fun. I've always been a real puss. Like, I barely have done anything.
Except besides weed, it's the only drug I've ever enjoyed. But I really haven't tried any of the drugs you're mentioning at all.
It took me a minute to figure out what Special K was, but I haven't heard that one in a while. I don't know.
Ketamine, it's like a cat tranquilizer, and there's Ketacet, which is a horse tranquilizer. You can air dry it or cook it or whatever the fuck. But we used to do that. We used to sell it.
Do you remember the last time you did a drug of any kind, that like that moment that it was like, all right, never again, that actual moment?
Yeah, it was May 18th, 2009. And I got so fucked up. I got drunk and coked out so bad that I thought I was having a heart attack. And I fell asleep on my friend's bathroom floor and woke up. I had shit and pissed all over myself and threw up. And I had to clean up the mess. And I had like a fucking, well, yeah, like, you know, I probably had a seizure too. Like I if I wasn't face down, I would have died. And I was like, okay, like I'm done. It was my third situation like that where I like put myself in a bad way. And I was like, I'm done.
And now it's over 10 years. That's pretty wild. You're sober for over 10 years. That's crazy.
Yeah. I'll be 11 in like less than a month.
Was Bad Wolves had a tour on schedule when this shit happened? Like, where are you guys? What was the plan?
We just got back from an arena tour with Five Finger and Megadeth. And then we came home and we were just supposed to take it easy. And we were going to film a music video. And then this whole thing hit. And then it was very obvious that our May tours were going to be canceled. We're supposed to go on tour this summer with Disturbed and Stained. We don't have an official word on if it's over. There's a lot of debate. We didn't talk about any of the COVID-19 shit, which like that could have been an entire episode because I'm like a researcher. Mm-hmm. I don't like watch mainstream media, and there's a lot of fucked up shit going on, like real dubious fucked up shit.
Do you feel that it's not real? Is that what you're saying?
It's definitely real. It's definitely real, but the numbers are being padded. I know 14 people in New York who tested positive for the disease. Six of them had symptoms. There are nurses coming forward now online that keep shutting these people down, talking about that the some of the patients are being put on intubated on ventilators, closed circuit ventilators that are causing death because they don't know how to operate the ventilators and they're actually causing the death toll to go up. There are also
respiratory therapists.
They
told me that weeks ago. My mother and stepfather are respiratory therapists, and they both told me that weeks ago that the reason they're kind of keeping it quiet, the reason that we're not needing all the ventilators they got, and they're like Cuomo's like sending some back and everything, is because the ventilators were not the right treatment for all of this. It was a killing.
The ventilators are killing people, and Fauci has already said, you know, the Zithromax is a fine medication to combat pneumonia and what this is, and they are not using it because there's a political agenda. There's all kinds of conspiracy theories, but what it's boiling down to is there are now 17 physicians who have come out and said this is bullshit. And all of them have said the same thing, that they're being pressured to or being fined if they report less than a certain amount of numbers with COVID-19. I had a friend who died of leukemia, and his death was ruled COVID-19. He was dying already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, to me, the answer, because I've seen that debate a lot, and I don't think claim to know anything, but the logical, to me, simplest way to figure this out is if you took the last 3 years, 17, 18, 19, during this three-month period, get an average of how many people died.
They already have.
Now.
Well, wait, you need to understand, this has already been done. This, and right now, in Bakersfield and in Stanford, California, they tested over 6,000 people, and people are immune to it, which means they already got it. Wuhan was still having flights leaving China to San Francisco. So people in the Bay Area got infected with this in January.
Oh, yeah, I know.
So sure. there's either a vaccination agenda or there's a political agenda to fuck with the economy. None of us really know. Another doctor in the ER, she committed suicide this morning, an ER doctor with no background of mental health issues, no history of being on antidepressants, who's been practicing medicine for 30 years.
I'm not even
committed suicide.
I'm not even arguing this stuff, but it is far more, it appears, contagious than the flu. Because there's no like
it's more contagious, but I think that what's going to end up happening is it's going to seem that the death rate is lower.
But the thing is, you have to understand this statistically, right? All heart attacks and heart disease related deaths have disappeared. How could that be?
Right. I understand that a lot. That's for sure. Weird.
2,000 people in America die. 2,000 and approximately 2,670 people die every single day in America. Every day from heart disease or something related to heart disease. We don't shut down McDonald's. We don't shut down Burger King. That's when you do the math, that's over 600,000 people here in the United States die from heart disease.
For whatever it's worth, I just think I said at this point, and I'm definitely on the side of like erring on being cautious and safe. But I mean, like open the shit up when they say they're going to open it up and just, I think it should be like, man, just wear masks and gloves if you don't want to fucking get it. You know what I mean? Like,
this doesn't do anything. You have to understand, like, the CDC has admitted that gloves and masks are useless. They are mandating this. Governors are doing statewide mandatory gloves and masks to keep the hysteria down.
I agree.
It has no effect. It has no effect.
They did say that it prevents, if I'm sick, it may prevent me from giving it to you, but that's all it does. It doesn't help you not get it.
If you're not at high risk and you don't have an elderly person or a person with an autoimmune disease living with you, your own natural immune system will combat this and produce the antibodies that will cure it. It's talking about herd immunity. That's how the human race deals with these things. This is like every flu is considerably a pandemic. We just don't respond to it like this because there's no alternative agenda.
But there's also a flu vaccine, right? And also the flu has been around a lot longer, so we know how to manage it. Playing devil's advocate.
Sure, we do know how to manage it, but that's because the flu, the influenza, is a natural occurrence. COVID-19 is patented and it's owned by Bill Gates. They made this during the Obama administration in the United States. The government sanctioned that it be stopped. So they moved their research to Wuhan. Obama gave $3.7 million to the facility in Wuhan where the American doctors continue, American virologists continue to manufacture this. It's a hybrid of the HIV virus and influenza. They made it as a biological weapon, and most likely somebody got sick at work and went home and all these fucking people got sick. That's what happened.
I've not done the research to debate that with you, but I've read a lot of alternate theories about Bill Gates.
Just look up. There's Dr. Battir is a military virologist and oncologist. He blew the whistle on this 2 weeks ago. Okay, they blocked him and took him off YouTube. Now, Dr. Nicholson, who's out of Bakersfield, that conducted the field research over 6,000 patients. Has also been blocked from YouTube and Instagram and Facebook because they are trying to cover up and justify what they have done. When this whole thing blows over, a lot of people are going to go to jail.
I don't even know how to even begin to debate that because I don't have enough information on any of it. But
I research things and I cross-reference them and then I communicate with people who literally – fans that work in the health community or in healthcare, doctors, people in the military, the people who are in our fan base and the connections that we made throughout the years of doing what we do to cross-reference information. I am always like, I don't know anything for a fact. I take information and then I say, hey, did you hear about this? Hey, I ask people who are professionals in that field what my opinion should be because I don't believe anything that the news says anymore. And no one should. CNN is fucking posting videos of UFO sightings. That's how desperate they are to avert our attention from what the fuck is going on in front of us.
Right, but I could also argue, I think that the government, I think that that was released by the White House today to divert everyone's attention, not necessarily CNN.
It's not released by the White House, it was released by the Pentagon. And you have to ask yourself, first of all, no one cares.
Well, that's the thing. No one gave a shit about it. That's true.
We're in such a fucked up situation that the entire human race doesn't even give a shit if there's proof of alien existence in the universe because our situation has become so grave on a global economic scale. More people are going to die from suicide and criminal violence. When people who don't have money to survive are going to have to go out and do whatever they have to do, and that's going to create martial law and a police.
I read today that over 20% of there'll be over 20% unemployment by June if this continues. But we got to wrap this up though. So Tommy, thank you so much for taking the time out. Let's do plugs all around. If you want to hit all your social media and everything for the you.
Just follow me on Tommy Vex at Tommy Vex on Instagram at Bad Wolves on Instagram. BadWolvesNation.com. We're also doing this thing outside of Patreon. There's Bad Wolves on Patreon. Today, we announced we are selling quarantine masks. Every quarantine mask that we sell, we will be donating masks to what do you got there?
Those are our masks, our little sleeve.
Oh, nice. Well, we're donating masks to a foundation that helps children who are victims of sex trafficking.
Wow. It seems like
so that you can check that out on our website today or on Facebook, facebook.com/badwolves. And that's it.
And the Patreon with the new songs as well. Big J.
BigJComedy.com this Saturday night, I believe, on Gas Digital. They're going to be doing double feature of my first Comedy Central album and my first Comedy Central Hour special live at Webster Hall. So check that out. My Netflix half hour special. Still up there, Degenerates, season one, episode one. And that's it. Just stay
Noonies.
Active on the old social media. Big J. Okerson on everything.
Fair enough.
Listen to my podcast, The Thing Is, Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. Tommy was on a couple weeks ago. We had really fun stories from him. Follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. Tommy, thank you so much for taking the time out on this. Really fascinating stuff. Crazy story, crazy life story, and I look forward to seeing Bad Wolves out on tour we'll do the song with my boyfriend in it. Let's play Killing Me Slowly. We do it every week. We add a new song to the playlist, the sdrshow.com/playlist. And you, like me, can masturbate. How good looking the guy is. All right, we'll see you next week on the SDR Show.
Listening to the SDR Show.